Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from Augmented World Expo 2026 and digging into some of the different conversations that I have that give me a lot of hope and optimism for where things might be going here in the future, today's episode is with Tom Furness, who launched the Luminera Institute of Light at Augmented World Expo. So Tom has already been a retired emeritus professor at University of Washington and has been doing virtual reality since like the mid-60s, like even before Ivan Sutherland, in terms of working with the Air Force and working with the virtual cockpit and all sorts of different things that I think the full story of that hasn't been fully told. But he's one of the very early pioneers of virtual and augmented reality. And he took a lot of those ideas that he was learning in the military and started to teach and to try to bring up some of these different concepts into the broader academic community. Tom had the Virtual World Society that he was running for a number of years and passed all over the reins to Alvin Graylin to take that forward. And it was really trying to bring together education and XR. And education's always just been chronically underfunded. But now, as Tom is getting older in age and he's really thinking about what he wants to spend his time thinking and doing, and it's really around this aspect of human flourishing. How can we start to use these immersive technologies to pull in all that we know from all these different institutions and spiritual traditions, you know, everything from the Institute of Noetic Sciences and meditation, mindfulness, and kind of fuse them all together into really trying to embody these different core character traits of unconditional love and, you know, basically all these different dimensions of human flourishing. So I had a chance to talk to Tom and his vision that he announced there at Augmented World Expo on June 17th, 2026 at his session there at 1:35 p.m. So yeah, he was kind of launching Luminera, but I had a chance to talk to Tom the day before he launched it just to get a bit of a sense of where his mind's at and where he wants to go here in the future with the Luminera Institute. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices VR podcast. So this interview with Tom happened on Tuesday, June 16th, 2026 at the Augmented World Expo in Long Beach, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Okay, Kent. Tom Furness here. I'm one of the original guys working on VR and AR, and I talked to you about it early on about it. I'm sort of now a retired professor, emeritus professor at the University of Washington, but also the founder of the Virtual World Society. And now I'm on the emeritus board member of that. And so now I'm have a new lease on life because I'm realizing that I'm eventually getting to my time in my life where I'm thinking about what I do with the remaining time I have left. And to me, there's so much wonder that we can create and goodness that we can create with this, with the technology of our age. But we have to be responsible in the way we're using it, because it's just like when we split the atom. We released an enormous power that can be used for blowing ourselves up or unlimited energy. And the question is, how are we going to use it? How are we going to make the best decisions with using the power that we have? And we're especially at that point now where I feel the technology that we have created is outrunning our humanity. That indeed, we now are almost, I won't call it servants of the tools, but the tools are competing for our attention. They are providing the avenues for competing for our attention. And because they're so good, and they have been designed in order to gather our attention, that we're spending more time being attracted to these things than we are really what's going on in our lives. And so in a way, I believe that we have to figure out a way to recapture who we really are, sort of a self-realization. And then the question comes to mind, well, can we use the same tools that are taking us away from what our real lives are in the real world? Can we use some of those same tools to actually help us realize who we are and the incredible capability we have? So as we don't often think about the idea that we are actually a soul that has a body and mind and spirit that is really amazing and complex, and that what we often do is we don't realize that we have the power that we have. And so I think that it's already there, everything we need to save our civilization is already within us. But the question is, are we going to be able to realize it and awaken those things that we have? So the Virtual World Society that I started a number of years ago was the first attempt to look at the humanitarian applications of the XR technology. And indeed, we've had some success in getting members on board and people that are thinking about that. And after starting that and working on it for a number of years, I've sort of handed over that responsibility to one of my former students, Alvin Graylin, who's now doing a good job in terms of trying to keep up with that mission. But what happened was that I decided, well, what am I going to do now that I'm not leading this society? I'm still involved, of course. And I realized that, you know, why don't I look at how we can look at the future and project how we can solve these problems that we have in the world, these pervasive problems that are pretty much instantiated by the 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. How can we start looking at technology as a means of solving the problems that technologies happened yesterday? And so when we started working on this, we realized, actually, we're not smart enough to do that. We don't have really the internal tools to do that. And it's just like what Einstein said, that you can't expect to solve these problems using the same thinking that caused the problems to begin with. So we started thinking about, well, what kind of person could solve these problems, could actually see the forest, the trees, because that's what we need to do is rise above and look at how all the bits are connected with each other. So when in my futures subcommittee that I started as part of the Science and Ethics Council of the Virtual World Society, I started meeting with people, and we built a little team looking at how do we, first of all, identify the attributes of a person who can solve these problems. And then how do we develop the pathways to obtaining those attributes? So we identified 16 attributes. And these things have to do with, you know, unconditional love and radical creativity and wisdom and being able to connect with nature and all of these kinds of things that probably as humans we were using back in the day, the wisdom of the ancients, because they have a lot of time. They didn't have a lot of media to compete with their time. So they realized that all of these things are really connected. And now, of course, today, our quantum physicists are beginning to say the same thing. Everything is connected. And because of what they're understanding now with the structures that are in plants and in animals that support things like quantum entanglement and quantum tunneling. So here we have the ancients and the moderns sort of coming together and saying, hey, you know, it's not like you're isolated. It's not like you're by yourself. So one of the issues we started looking at is, well, how in the world do we really tap this quantum abundance that's out there? And so we identified these 16 attributes, and we started looking at the pathways to how do we gain those or unlock those. We already have these capabilities, enormous sensory capability we have, and processing memory capabilities that we're not really using effectively. And so what happened to me is that the realization that what we need is a school for us, a school for our souls, because it's like when you learn to fly an airplane, you have to go to, especially a military airplane, you have to go to ground school for a while and learn how the physics work about flight and how do you navigate and how do you communicate, those kinds of things. And then you start practicing these things in simulators, and then you eventually go into a training aircraft and learn how to get in the air and fly it. And then you go to the aircraft you eventually want to get to, and with an instructor pilot, you learn how to fly that. But it's all about gaining these experiences, knowledge, and then experiences applying that until you're able to be an aviator and fly by yourself in these airplanes. Well, the question was with our own ship, the ship I'm calling our soul ship, our body, mind, and spirit, you know, where's our cockpit? Where's our trainer? Where are the training wheels for us to be able to learn how to make use of the capabilities we already have? Especially when we have more senses than five. We really have about 23, 24, depending on how you count. Probably more than that. So we started what is called a light school. The light school was to basically teach us how to use these capabilities and unlock them. And as we started working on the light school, we realized actually, we don't really know what to teach. We don't know how to teach it. And furthermore, there's a real problem calling yourself a school. Because when you call yourself a school, that really constrains the avenues for gaining resources to do this work. We realize we really aren't really a school by itself. We really are a research institute. We're really trying to research these things and build new instrumentation to measure what's going on inside our body and ways to relate it to people with biofeedback and measuring biofields and other things that we can now say, okay, this is what's going on inside of me. Now, how do we take advantage of that and helping awaken things to help us work with what's outside of us? So that made us decide that we need to rename ourselves from just a light school to an institute of light that would have research components in it, as well as a school, an academy, a soulship academy. So that's what I'm launching tomorrow, officially, is the Illuminara Institute of Light. And what I'll be talking about is how we got to this point and why we want to think of ourselves in a different way, because every piece of what we're trying to do, all the way from research and building the super cockpit for the soul, Lumina Lingua, which is a new language of light we're trying to develop, providing virtual world experiences where you learn about unconditional love, you learn about wisdom, how to tap higher dimensionality, all of these far out things that are really already embedded in us, we realize that each one of those has its own trajectory and its own life, and that you blend them together to a light school. But we have to discover these things first before we can go teach them. And part of it is teaching ourselves. How can we teach anything we don't really understand yet? So now that's what we're launching, is Luminara. And we have people now of all walks of life that are involved in morphing from the light school into the Luminara Institute of Light. Well, we have 100 pioneers that are all the way from opera singers to movie directors to neurologists and engineers and artists and storytellers, all coming together to go on a journey. So what we're trying to do is not invite people to join an organization. We're trying to invite people to go on a journey. And this journey is one that where we have to put all these pieces together, because the end game is to take the headset off. The headset is there as part of the training, but we really have to go out in the world and start doing it, practicing in that. And that's why these are the training wheels. The technology of our age are training wheels for us now to go out and take this repertoire of capabilities we now have discovered we already had along, and then solve the problems of how do we use our imagination, curiosity, creativity. How do we manifest unconditional love? How do we do these things in a world that will take us out of this darkness we're in now into a place where we realize, yes, the darkness was necessary to awaken us to see that there's more, and that more can come from not only discovering the light in ourselves, but being able to receive light from the universe and then reflect it and send it to others so that they can grow their light. So that's what I'm up to.
Nice. That sounds really amazing. And it reminds me of a conference I went to a number of years ago before the pandemic. It was called the Awakened Future Summit, and it had psychedelic researchers. It had representatives from different spiritual contemplative practices and indigenous practices of working with psychedelics and entheogens, and then also with technologists. And so you had
the psychedelic contingent, the spiritual contingent, and then a technological contingent were all collaborating on what was kind of an umbrella of consciousness hacking, but trying to kind of fuse all these different lineages and traditions together. So it sounds something very similar. Are you sort of reaching out to existing spiritual traditions and contemplative practices?
Yes. I mean, we're not going to be able to do it all by ourselves. We don't want to do it all by ourselves because there are all these traditions and people waiting to take what they're in their thoughts and bring them together. So in this way, we're sort of hoping to be a catalyst. We already have a number of organizations that we are working with, you know, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, you know, the people that are working on brain computer interfaces. I mentioned Arthur C. Clarke, the Center for the Human Imagination. All of these folks are gathering together with us, and we want to help them achieve their mission, and in the process, as a catalyst, bringing these things together into an experience, into a journey where we put them to practice. But in the end, it's the practicum where we actually get out and apply what we've learned. Now, it could be that the school part of it is not only the way that we help others grow their light, but we continue to grow our light, because the end game is human becoming, and there is no period at the end of that sentence. There is no, you graduate. You're not going to graduate from this school. You're just going to continue and be enlightened and become a being of light, increase your frequency to where, you know, caring about others and being able to help others. It's just sort of like back to the adage, you only get to keep what you give away. But I'm so amazed at how all this resonates with some of these organizations, which also are seeing the same things that we're seeing, that we have to really become more than we are now and become these transcendent beings. But yes, and this is nothing new. I mean, people have been thinking about this for a long time, and especially some of the ancient traditions and the meditators, the transcendental meditation movement that I was involved in with the Beatles and the Maharishi back in the day. You know, all of this was after the same thing of awakening and really realizing who we are. Self-realization is part of this.
Yeah, I've attended a number of Institute of Noetic Sciences conferences where they have talked about how a lot of the crisis that we face today is around a crisis of consciousness. And so we really need to have a lot of paradigm shifts into what I've identified as like Alfred North Whitehead's process philosophy and being more in deep relationality with the world around us. It seems to be, for me, a nice way of describing the metaphysics of that relational ontology that's really based on prioritizing relationships and processes as being a fundamental thing. But as you talk about this, it also reminds me of Joseph Pine's recent book called The Transformation Economy, where he's talking about how we've had different economies where you have commodities, goods, and services. And then he wrote with James Gilmore in 1999, The Experience Economy, where he was defining that, you know, you're customizing services that goes to experiences. And then if you customize the experience, then you go into something that is utterly transformational. So it sounds like a lot of what you're talking about is also trying to have this transformation, to have people have human flourishing, to achieve their aspirations, and to really have this transformative experience help maybe catalyzed by the technology or an experience, but to have some way of be in more deep alignment with your own daimon or your purpose to be here on the planet. So it seems like your own approach to creating these transformative experiences, but also integrating them into this purpose of human flourishing.
You said it better than I've said it. Really, yes. That's a wonderful way to put it. I taught for many years at the university a course in technology-based entrepreneurship. And it's interesting, the last class I taught before retiring was with some seniors that are taking this course in technology-based entrepreneurship. And I asked them to work in, and the whole idea of the course is to, how do you come up with marketable products that are sustainable rather than just flashing in a pan? You know, you can build gadgets and things, but where is it really going to help people? And because of that, the societal drivers that will be pulling this, whatever you decide to come up with, will be the pull that helps sustain it. Push, yes, you have push with what can happen with technology, but how you put the two together, where there's this tension between push and pull, and that is where the magic can happen. But one of the exercises I had them to do is to actually go in groups of four and just go out on the campus somewhere and just sit down and chat about what are these challenges? What are these societal drivers that is a problem space where you want to try to work for solutions? And they came back and then reported on what their group said. And every one of them, now these are seniors in university, in a major university in the world. Every one of the groups came back that their biggest concern was mental illness, their own mental illness. They were concerned about themselves like they never had been. I never heard that from my students before, never. And of course, these students have been through COVID. They lost part of their lives, you know, in that, the traditional lives they would have as students. But that is what's happening today. And it reflects what you were saying, that people are now concerned about, you know, what is it that I'm missing? What is it that isn't fulfilling me? And yes, there are so many attractors out there. In the talk I'm going to give here tomorrow, I'm showing a switchboard. And the old telephone exchanges, you had a switchboard. You had a telephone operator. You know, and that you had this array of all those jacks. And then you had a plug. And the whole idea is, okay, in order to connect, you take this cord and this plug, and then you have to decide where to push it in. And then what happens when you push it in, there is an exchange that takes place. Now, that exchange we're calling, among other things, information. But inform is an interesting word because it means form within. So when you're plugging this in, something forms within you based on what's coming. But also it works the other way. There's something you're forming within what's on the other side of that switchboard. Now, the question is, you have all of these choices. You have your free will, your own agency, and you have some time. You holding that plug in your hand, where are you going to put it in that switchboard? Now, you could say, well, I'm just going to try out a bunch of things and find out what works. Well, that's wasting your time. That's wasting your will, perhaps. But what if there's a way for you to know, even though you haven't pushed in that plug, that you had a hunch of where you should go with it? And that can happen, but it doesn't happen the way we traditionally think it happens, just by going out there and doing things. We need to know ahead of time. And that's where this component of our knowing, there's a part of us that already knows that. How can we listen to that and guide us into how our user agency and where we're going to plug in? So part of the Luminary Institute of Light is to help us, guide us where we should put our energy so that we are fulfilled. Because if we're just plugging and playing randomly, we'll probably not get where we want to be. Yeah.
Nice. And finally, as we think about moving forward, what do you see as your deepest intention for what you would like to see if you tap into your own creative imagination for the endpoint or potential that you're striving for? What does that look like for this institute?
Well, one of the metaphors I'm using is that it's sort of like the pioneers that were in the covered wagons going out west. They were going after something where they believed would be fulfilling for them. A change in their life, you know, sort of a manifest destiny, if we want to call it that. But they knew it was going to be a difficult road. And they knew that they needed to provision themselves for taking that journey. But the important part was the journey itself. Because in the covered wagon, day after day after day, what would they experience along the way in terms of connecting to the earth, connecting with each other, connecting with things, spirits higher than them that would keep them going? And that process was probably more important than the destination because they were different by the time they got to their destination. And so I believe that that's my heart of hearts, we need to take those kind of journeys. It's probably be different for everyone, but we need to be doing it together. And we need to do it where we are learning better to connect with each other. And in the process of connecting each other, we learn to connect with the birds and the honeybees and with the flowers and the earth and with the other people that are out there and getting there. And so it's just like learning to swim. No matter how much instruction you have, how many videos you watch, the instructor or whatever, the only way you're going to learn to swim is to dive in and experience being in the water. Same is true with flying. Yeah, you can do a lot of simulations, but nothing takes the place of getting in the air yourself. So that's what this is about. We can do a lot of school stuff, but we got to do the practice. And so this idea of going on a journey, like a covered wagon journey, and using a super cockpit for the soul, using heart beaming, using these tools, Illumina Lingua, for our new language of communicating with each other, will help us along the way. But in the end, it's really what we become.
Nice. Anything else left inside you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
Well, this is a thank you for what you do. You are taking our voices and giving us an opportunity to get out to a number of people. But it's not one person that's doing this. It's the whole spirit, especially this conference. This conference is a living conference, and that's what I call a love-in of nerds, you know. my hope is I'm 83 years old, and I don't know how much time I have left, but the way I want to spend out these last years is doing something worthwhile, and hopefully leaving behind some things that learned along the way that can help, just like the ancients that we want to learn from as well.
Awesome. I'm really excited to see where you would take this next step. And what's the name of the institute again?
Luminera Institute of Technology. Of course, it's all about light and how do we receive and grow our own light as well as give it to others.
Awesome. Well, very much looking forward to see how this continues to develop and looking forward to getting more involved in any way that I can. And also just, I hope for people to hear the message and think about how they want to think about these deeper questions of how to achieve these deeper levels of flourishing in their own lives, but also bring about the different paradigm shifts that we need to have in our societies so that we're prepared to deal with all these emerging and immersive technologies. So thanks so much, Tom.
Well, one word of advice to you. You know more than anybody else about what's going on out there. And putting that together in your observations, as you have in the past, is a really important part of this journey for all of us. Because you are the integrator of all this stuff. What's going on?
Awesome. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast and for keeping the faith for where this industry is going here in the future. I feel like this is a kind of weird time for everybody in the industry. And if you believe in where this technology may go and that it may be able to bring about positive social change and transformation in the world, then please do consider supporting me here at the Voices of VR podcast, trying to navigate these dimensions of transformation and positive change for where all this might be going. So if you enjoy the coverage that I'm doing here, then please do consider becoming a member at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.